Content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host and producer for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service studio. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in your community and for achieving your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as nonprofit organizations that promote information on laws supporting independent living. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about service animals and assistance animals. I'm assisted myself today by Shay Hargett Hill, my engineer. Hello, Shay.
Hi. I'm
very glad to have your help here today, and I think you're going to be interested in this program, as our listeners are. Very important distinction between service animals and assistance animals.
Yeah, very.
And I had to read up on this. My own background, of course, is in labor and employment law, so I'm dealing with disabilities in the workplace.
Yeah.
Service animals and assistance animals have to do with, well, we'll get into it, but animals that go into public places, not necessarily places of employment. And a very sharp distinction between service animals and assistance animals. We've actually covered service animals in the past. And when we say service animals, really what we're talking about are guide dogs. There is also provision for miniature horses as a service animal. I myself have never seen anybody use a horse in a public place, but guide dogs is really what we're talking about.
Okay.
And in order for a guide dog to qualify as a service animal, the guide dog has to be trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of an individual with a disability. If those elements are met, it is an absolute right of the person to have the guide dog with them in the public place. They don't have to ask permission to enter the premises. They don't have to have any documentation, and they don't have to register the animal in any way.
Really?
That's right.
That's interesting.
That is, I think so. So that if the person comes into the public place with a guide dog, the only questions the proprietor can ask are, is the animal required because of a disability? And if the answer to that question is yes, then what work or tasks has the animal been trained to perform? Of course, if it's a guide dog and the person is manifestly visually impaired, then really those questions aren't necessary to be asked. But there are occasions when, you know, a dog comes in and the person may not have a manifest disability. For example, if the person has a seizure problem, then the animal may be trained to alert the person to an oncoming seizure. And so the first question would be, is the animal required because of a disability? Yes, that answer has to be taken. Then the second question, what work or task has the animal been trained to perform? And the person would say, it's for seizure alert. And that would be the end of the interrogation. In other words, the person would be legally allowed to have the animal in the place of business. Now, service animals are allowed in just about any place that's open to the public. You're talking about retail stores, restaurants, public housing, dormitories at educational institutions, in class, at schools, and in, on public transportation as well. The only time that animals can be excluded, service animals can be excluded, are if the animal is out of control. You know, you've got an animal that's snarling and frothing and obviously
threatening
people. That's
okay.
Right. Then that animal would not be allowed in. If the animal is not housebroken, the animal has to be housebroken. So if you've got a problem with that, then the proprietor can exclude the animal then. And then if there is any kind of a direct threat to health and safety. Now, we've already talked about the dog snarling and frothing at the mouth or just out of control. You know, animals can jump around and jump on people, and that's being out of control. But suppose you've got a dog that is of a breed that is thought to be dangerous, such as a pit bull.
Okay.
Pit bull is, to some people, is a threat. But there has to be an individualized assessment of the animal under the circumstances so that, you know, a particular breed that comes in, you can't exclude the person because of the breed of the animal unless the animal is showing signs of being a threat or out of control. So, in other words, you can't stereotype dogs.
Can't stereotype them like, yes, you're not supposed to stereotype people, right?
That's right. You can't stereotype service animals, and you can't stereotype people. That is the basic law of service animals, and we've gone over that in the past. Now, the confusion comes in, I think, when we start talking about assistance animals.
Yes, because I didn't know the difference between assistant and a service animal.
That's right. Assistance animals can be for personal comfort if the person is disabled. If you're not disabled, you can't just bring your pet in because your pet makes you feel good. You actually have to have a disability, which is a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits you in major activities of life. It's a very involved definition, but an individual has to be disabled in order to use an assistance animal in public places. Now, the service animals can go just about anywhere, and assistance animals can probably just about go anywhere. Assistance animals, though, are an accommodation. You know, the service dogs are not an accommodation. They are, like I say, you've got an absolute right to the service animal if they meet those two criteria we talked about.
Okay.
An assistance animal has to be an accommodation. And so what is it an accommodation for? Well, the person has to have a disability, like we say. That person has to have a mental or physical impairment that substantially impairs their ability to engage in major life activities. And the animal has to be necessary to afford the person with an equal opportunity to enjoy the, and typically we're talking about housing. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, whether it's public housing or place in an apartment complex or condominiums or dormitories at a college.
Mm-hmm.
But the animal has to be necessary to afford the person with equal opportunity to enjoy the housing or the public accommodation.
That's still rather confusing, though.
Well,
in the sense of it, because of course, like when you say the service dog, you automatically think of a person that's blind and they have their service dog, so you don't even really question that. But when it comes to the assisted dogs and having an animal that way, how do you kind of quantify that?
That is the $64,000 question.
Okay.
Because certainly this is an area that is fraught and people are confused about it, and we're going to try to shed some light on it. And here's another aspect of it that adds to the confusion. It's not just dogs that can be assistance animals. It can be any species whatsoever.
Mm, wow, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So what are the requirements? Well, first of all, the person has to have a disability. In other words, can't just be, it makes me feel better to, you know, when I have my dog with me or when I have my boa constrictor around my neck. The person has to have a disability. The animal has to be necessary to afford the person with an equal opportunity to enjoy whatever it is that we're talking about. And usually we're talking about housing. And there has to be a nexus. There has to be a connection between the what the animal does or is and the disability. In other words, that animal has to alleviate some symptom that I've got as a disabled person. So what are we talking about there? Well, you know, we might be talking about, a generalized anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And my dog or my cat or potentially my boa constrictor
mm-hmm.
provides me with comfort. It alleviates the symptoms of my anxiety. And so, if you can hit all of those stops, then the animal will qualify as an assistance animal. You see the signs, no pets allowed.
Mm-hmm.
No pets allowed. Well, service animal is not a pet. A service dog is not a pet. The service dog does particular work or tasks.
Mm-hmm.
The assistance animal is not a pet either.
Hmm.
If the person with a disability is able to prove those essential elements that we've just talked about. And of course, it because it is an accommodation for disability, it has to be a reasonable accommodation. So in the case of a service animal, a service dog, I can't require the person to provide any kind of documentation. In other words, a person comes in with a guide dog, I can't say, let me see the registration for that animal as a guide dog. I can't ask for that.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of an assistance animal, though, I can ask for documentation if I am the owner of the premises or I'm the landlord or the manager of the apartment complex. I can ask the person to show me documentation. Now, the documentation can't be about the disability per se.
Oh.
It has to be something like a prescription from a provider, a healthcare provider, that says that this animal is an assistance animal and it is necessary to alleviate this person's symptoms. Doesn't have to go into the person's disability.
Okay.
Just has to be kind of like a prescription for an assistance animal. So, and it has to be reasonable. How does it become reasonable to have an assistance animal? Well, let's back into that. Let's talk about areas where you don't have to allow somebody to have their assistance animal.
Okay.
And in the housing field, rental dwellings of four or fewer units where one unit is occupied by the owner. In other words, if it's a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex where one of the tenants or one of the people who resides there is the owner of the duplex, the triplex, or the fourplex, then that owner can exclude assistance animals from the premises, from the other rental units.
Okay. Only the owner could do that.
That's right. Okay. So that if you, and again, it's four units or less, so you're talking about a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex, and the owner has to be one of the occupants of one of the units.
Okay.
Okay. Then if it is a single family home and the owner who rents it out does not use a broker, in other words, it is the owner of the house is renting out the house and managing the rental himself or herself, then that owner can exclude assistance animals in that case. And the only other place where an assistance animal can be excluded from housing is by a private club that leases out or rents out space to its members. So very few legal exceptions to this rule on assistance animals.
Okay. So you really don't get as much leeway than you do as if you had a service animal.
Right. If you got a service dog, then you've got an absolute right to have the service dog if you've met those requirements that we've talked about, that you've got the disability and the service animal, the service dog, has been trained to do a specific task or work in behalf of the disabled person.
Okay.
That is really the key difference between a service animal, guide dog, and the assistance animal, because the assistance animal does not have to be trained. Can be pet guinea pig or a pet gerbil. Can be any species. Does not have to be a dog. So, you know, which you can train a dog, but and you can train a cat too, but a cat can't be a guide dog or a service animal. But a cat can be an assistance animal.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect of this is that the breed, size, or weight of the animal is not of consequence in most cases. In other words, it can be a great big animal or it can be a little tiny animal, and it can still be an assistance animal. But because it's an accommodation for the disability, it has to be a reasonable accommodation. So you can't bring a pony into, you know, a 600 square foot apartment space.
Yeah.
It's breed, size, and weight limits don't apply, but within reasonable limits.
Okay.
Nor can the assistance animal pose a direct threat of harm. And here again, there has to be an individualized assessment of the animal. It can't be a stereotype of the animal. And you know, I keep going back to boa constrictor. Certainly a boa constrictor is going to freak out most people.
Yes.
And to tell you the truth, I don't know whether a boa constrictor is per se dangerous or not. You know, sometimes you see people with them, not out in public very much, but that would be an interesting case. Yes. And we're talking about housing. We're talking about housing most of the time. So if it's a pet, of course, and you are a landlord or the manager, you can allow pets, and you can have a pet deposit. If it is a bona fide assistance animal, though, you can't require the pet deposit to be paid for an assistance animal.
What, so now?
That's right. There is, it's because it's not a pet. Okay. An assistance animal is not a pet.
Okay.
An assistance animal is an accommodation.
Okay.
Under the it's under the Fair Housing Act, where this comes into play. And so the law says that you cannot require someone to make a pet deposit to have the assistance animal. Now, if the assistance animal does damage to the premises, then you can assess the person with the cost of cleaning up, with the cost of repairing the damage, but you can't require a deposit up front. And here again, documentation may be required if the need for the animal is not manifest. Now, of course, if you've got a guide dog and you're visually impaired, then, there again, you don't have to have any documentation. You don't have to have a prescription from the doctor to have a guide dog. And typically with assistance animals, we're talking about a mental disability, anxiety that needs to be assuaged by the animal. The landlord or the manager of the premises can require documentation in that case of this animal assuages some symptom the person experiences, and that's the need for the assistance animal.
That's still interesting to me that the assistance animal doesn't have to have, it's not considered you have to pay a pet deposit, but you would for your service animal.
No.
You don't have to pay in either case. Okay.
Greater includes the lesser. In other words, if you don't require it for an assistance animal, then you don't require it. You can't require it for the guide dog because you go back, no pets allowed, or we require a pet deposit.
Okay.
Just as the assistance animal is not a pet, the service animal is not a pet, and even more so.
Okay.
There's a higher level of training required for the service animal.
Okay.
So what if you need multiple service animals?
Wow.
Well, I haven't seen any cases on that point, but the logic of the law would say that if it's kind of like taking three aspirins. I mean, if one or two will do you good, just think about how much good three does. So if my cat assuages my symptoms, just think how much good two or three cats will do. Mm-hmm. Well, here again, you would have to have the prescription from the healthcare provider. And I imagine you would need to have some basis for saying that this person needs to have three cats to alleviate the problems. But that's sort of an open question. There's not a whole lot of case law on that. I think it's an interesting issue, particularly these days. I mean, you see people with two dogs and more and two cats and more. And so just an interesting issue that can come up. So enforcement of the law. Of course, service animals are allowed under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. The Americans with Disabilities Act is a separate law, and that aspect of it is enforced by the Department of Justice. So the Department of Justice is the enforcement agency for most ADA issues. Mm-hmm. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is the enforcement agency for housing issues, and specifically for the law that applies to service animals. Now, of course, Department of Housing and Urban Development, Washington, D.C., they don't have offices all over the United States. And in North Carolina, the enforcement is basically delegated to an agency of North Carolina state government. and that is the North Carolina Human Relations Council. So that's where people go to get relief for all kinds of disability issues in North Carolina, whether it's with a condominium, with their planned housing association, or with the apartment complex or what have you. But it is the North Carolina Human Relations Council that enforces these laws and tries to mediate between the owners and the landlords and the tenants for housing issues. Another important resource in North Carolina, and particularly in Raleigh, and attorneys from this office have been guests on our program in the past, is the North Carolina Disability Rights people. Yeah. Great, great resource here in Raleigh. They've got a wonderful cadre of attorneys and paralegals and staff to help people who have disability issues, and they are very well-versed on all of these issues.
Good to know.
Well, so any more questions, Shay? Or
no, it's been fascinating to learn about the differences. Until you just told me, I didn't really understand what, assistance animals were.
Right. Even the assistance boa constrictors.
Yes.
So, we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. We rebroadcast the next day on Wednesday at 7 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information about your legal rights for obtaining equal access and for full participation in your community. I'm Joe Austin, your host and producer for Triangle Radio Reading Service. I want to thank Shay Hargett Hill for being my engineer and my interlocutor today. The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can readily find it as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org, where you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. You can also reach us via email at info@trrsnc.org. We look forward to hearing from you and look forward to presenting next month. Thanks very much.